Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Kajsa Ekis Ekman. She's a journalist and author of two books. Today we will be discussing her book, Being and Being Bought, Prostitution, Surrogacy, and the Split Self. She lives in Sweden. So first, thank you for your work, and thank you for agreeing to be interviewed.
Well, thank you for inviting me to the show.
So my first question is, let's talk first about prostitution, and why slash how did you choose to write about this?
Well, the reason why I started writing about prostitution, it's actually quite interesting because I like to combine theory and practice when I write. I think that's a very fruitful way of understanding reality. So this book came about when I was, first of all, I was living together with a woman who was selling herself on the highway, and this was in Barcelona, Spain. So I was seeing prostitution, you know, quite up close, and I was seeing her the way she would leave home every day at 6 o'clock. She would come back 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and start drinking and talking about what she'd been through and everything, and her life was not very nice, if you would put it that way. You know, she had to support her boyfriend slash pimp. She had to get money for his brother who was in jail and, you know, find money for a lawyer for him. She also had a son back in Russia that she wanted to reunite with. And so I was seeing, you know, the life quite up close. And also pimps would come to our house and try to convince everyone else, all the other girls living there, to also enter prostitution. When I later returned to Barcelona, like a couple of years after that, it turned out she passed away. And this was at the same time as a debate was starting in Sweden about whether prostitution was a job just like any other, whether being against it made you a moralist or a sex hater or something like that. And basically equating prostitution with all the progressive terms like, you know, women's rights, you know, the right to choose, sexuality and all that. And I just knew it wasn't quite like that. So that's basically the starting point. So my book is a kind of a polemic against the theory that sex is work.
So you talked there about practice. So where did the theory come in?
When I was researching the book, I read basically everything that was written about prostitution, and I realized there had been a kind of change in rhetoric, and especially the rhetoric that seeks to legitimize prostitution. About 100 years ago, when the prostitution industry was quite big, the way it is now, the rhetoric was that prostitution was necessary for civilization. If men didn't have access to prostitutes, they would basically go out and rape decent women. Nobody would be able to stand being married to any man because he would want sex all the time. And, of course, no decent woman could handle that, the rhetoric went. And also talking about people in prostitution, prostituted women as inferior, biologically inferior. So that was the rhetoric back then. Now the rhetoric has modernized, you know, instead of saying prostitution is the world's oldest profession, we have a kind of idea that prostitution is a modern profession, that through prostitution, we can achieve women's liberation, sexual freedom, joining trade unions and fighting for our rights and whatnot. So I'm trying to analyze that theory defending prostitution, what it really means and why it came up.
So, one of the central points of your book, or one of the points that I thought was incredibly powerful, was there's a lot of discussion about choice and consent in discussions of prostitution, and how, because there is an exchange of money, I guess, that somehow means it's consensual. And You have a discussion of that that I think is really profound and is not part of the discourse on this in a way that I think it should be.
Yeah, well, basically, I put it quite straight. You know, to me, prostitution is sex between two people, one that wants it and one that doesn't. That's the basis of all prostitution. It doesn't matter if it's in a fancy hotel or on the street, you know, you still have that criteria that it's one person there who is horny, excited, wants to have sex, whatever, and the other person who doesn't. That's why the payment comes in instead of desire. Obviously, you know, if you have two people who both want each other, they don't pay. And if you have two people and nobody wants nobody, nobody has sex at all, right? So, I mean, there you see, like, the basis is what I call inequality of desire. And now, of course, all prostitution is not trafficking. I mean, there are cases, of course, where people consent to getting paid for having sex. But they're consenting for the money, not for the sex. And to me, that goes against the idea of sexual liberation, which is that we're supposed to have sex because we want to, because we feel like it, not because we're being paid and hate it. You know, and I think one thing that's very interesting is how the sex industry in places where it's legalized, like in parts of Australia, it's doing surveys on its potentials for growth, right? And in one of these surveys, it says, well, the sex industry has great potentials for growth despite competition from unpaid sex, right? And what does that mean? Of course, that every time you're sleeping with someone and you're not paying each other, you are a threat to the sex industry. You know, they don't want that. They want us to pay each other all the time for everything that we do. I mean, that's the point of capitalism anyway.
Well, there's a couple directions I want to go with this. One of them is that I have a book coming out next year that is about some of the problems in anarchism. And one of the problems is there's a lot of really oppressive sexuality that goes under the guise of liberation. There's a very strong defense of pornography in anarchism, and a really strong defense of prostitution in anarchism, and it goes on and on. And my point here is that consent seems to be their watchword. And one of the things I talk about in the book is that I find the word consent associated with sex really offensive anyway, because when I think about the word consent, well, I looked it up in the dictionary, and one of the examples they gave of the use of a sentence using the word is somebody consented to a search by a police detective. And I don't know about you, but I would rather that my sexual partner is more excited about sexuality than I would be if I were consenting to a search by a police detective. And think about it. You know, do kids have to consent to going to the amusement park? And do they consent to eating dessert? No.
Yeah, consent is something that you consent to something that you don't actually want to do.
Yeah. So I have problems even with the word consent just generically.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, you don't say, you know, I'm consenting to sleeping with you now. You kind of say, like, I'm dying to sleep with you now or something like that.
Exactly. I mean, for God's sake, if I wanted to have sex with somebody and she says, well, okay, I'll consent. It's like, forget it. You know, not actually very interested at this point. So that was one thing I wanted to say. Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to say, do you have any comment to that?
Yeah, well, I think it's very interesting how parts of the anarchist movement, and not only the anarchist movement, I mean the left in general, and even parts of the feminist movement, is defending prostitution, which is such a patriarchal and capitalist institution where men from the upper class are using the daughters of the working class as sexual tools for their own benefit while having their own upper class wives at home. You know, that's what happens. Of course, not only upper class men go to prostitutes, you know, but if you look at the people in the prostitution contract, I mean, there's no doubt there is a class difference there. There is a gender difference. There is an age difference. There's a social difference. There's often a difference of ethnicity or origin from the people, I mean, the buyer and the seller. So this is like, you know, any theory you want to apply, you will come to the point that this is exploitation. And I mean, I don't understand how you can call yourself, I mean, let alone feminist or anarchist. I mean, how can you call yourself a humanist and be for prostitution? I don't understand it. I mean, my only understanding of that is that most of the people haven't really been close to prostitution, haven't really seen what it's like.
Okay, I agree with you completely. And I'm going to just say something that I've read in some of the anarchist publications, which I disagree with, but I'd like to hear your response to, which is that Yes, they say. And by the way, before we get there, actually, I want to mention that the analysis I'm going to tell you was written by men. And it always cracks me up when I see men defending either prostitution or pornography, because you're a member of the oppressor class who is defending something that at the very least potentially harms members of an oppressed class. I mean, wouldn't you feel like a real idiot? As, I mean, it'd be like a white person in the United States in 1830 defending chattel slavery. You know, it's just, as a dude, I don't actually get to make a defense of pornography. Even if I believed it, I wouldn't get to make it because of the obvious, for the same reason that I wouldn't get to make an argument that African Americans aren't oppressed in the United States. I mean, as a member of the oppressor class, you don't get to do it.
Well, they do it anyway. They don't care if you think they don't get to do it, you know?
I don't know why they don't feel like idiots. But anyway, so here's one of the arguments is that what you say about consent, that one person, the only reason, what they're consenting to is that they want the money, but they don't really want the sex. They say that applies to every single job. And so what you're describing is not a problem with prostitution. What you're describing is a problem with the wage economy. And
oh,
that there is.
Of course. And I have a problem with that too. You're an anarchist, you would have. Like, what? That's my first point. I don't understand how people who are so utopian as anarchist people are and who actually want to abolish not only capitalism, but the state too, and money and everything, say that, oh, but we don't have to abolish prostitution, you know, which is like the worst of all these things combined, you see? And second of all, I don't think even the theory of prostitution being a job applies to that. I mean, first of all, you can just look at the statistics of mortality in prostitution, of abuse in prostitution. I mean, even though you would theoretically somehow come to the point that, yeah, this could be a job like any other, if it became, it wouldn't be legal because of the fact that prostitutes have 40 times higher mortality rate than people outside prostitution. You know, people are being murdered while they're in prostitution. They're dying from all these other reasons, just like my friend. So I don't think you would allow that in any legal job. But coming to the theoretical point about it being like, you know, any other job, I find it also very interesting that usually people tend to combine prostitution with like other jobs that people hate, if you know what I mean. Like, oh, it's just like cleaning toilets because, of course, nobody wants to do that, you know? Or it's just like working at McDonald's. Okay, but isn't that weird that we're comparing now the thing that people are supposed to like the most, which is sexuality, right, with the worst thing that you can imagine? You know, doesn't that tell you something about what you really think about that job? No, you don't really think it's sexual liberation if you're comparing it with the worst thing that you can imagine. So here we have a situation in which one person, namely the buyer, the client, is supposed to feel like he's having the time of his life. He's having the best sex of his life, right? And the other person is supposed to feel like she's cleaning a toilet. You know? I mean, how can that be a sexual ideal? How can that be a sexual utopia? Because then we're moving from the realm of sex being something, you know, where we're supposed to enjoy it, to something that we're just supposed to be able to withstand. And who's supposed to be able to withstand sex? You know, it's women, it's the working class, it's young people, it's people who have no other chances, are supposed to feel like sex is like cleaning a toilet. Whereas the upper class men are supposed to feel like sex in prostitution is fantastic. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, and I think you're sort of, you're going a direction of another, I think, brilliant piece of analysis that you do. Can you talk about the whole notion, basically, of, I don't remember the exact language you used, but basically of faking it?
Yeah, that's a major part of prostitution, and that's also what differs it from jobs in general. You know, I mean, if you go to McDonald's or if you have somebody clean your toilet, it's not like you're expecting the person to say, I love cleaning your toilet. It was like the most fantastic thing I ever did. My God, like your toilet is great. Like I can't believe I have the honor of being here. You know, you don't expect the person to say that, right? Because you know that the person is doing her job. But in prostitution, the buyer does not want prostitution to be a job. He wants the person he's having sex with in prostitution to convince him that she's doing it because he's great in bed. You know, that she actually has an orgasm, you know, and I'm saying she now because, of course, most of the people doing prostitution are women, though not all of them. So the person in prostitution has like a double task, you know, first of all, shutting off inside herself to feel like she can handle this, you know, because if she actually opened herself, opened her feelings, you know, she wouldn't be able to have 8, 9, 10 clients a day. So she's trying to shut off, right, inside herself, think that she's not there, you know, while at the same time convincing the buyer who is inside of her that this is the best thing, that he's a great lover, right? So this is what keeps on the myth in prostitution, the lie in prostitution. And I don't think a lot of buyers would buy sex if the person selling it would be honest to them, telling them that, you know what, you suck, just give me my money and leave. I don't like this at all.
Have you heard of Norma Hotling?
Yeah, I heard of her. She was the one that founded some of these John schools, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and she's dead.
That's what I was asking. She passed away. I heard about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I met her, I don't know, 10, 11 years ago, and then after that, at some point, I wrote a novel in which a couple of characters were women who were being prostituted. And
oh,
so,
do they have it here in Sweden?
Oh gosh, I doubt it. You know, it's pretty funny. My joke about that is I think that I actually spent more hours writing that book than all the readers combined have spent reading it. but it's a pretty good book. Anyway, I talked to her extensively before I did the book because I wanted to make sure the characters were realistic. And she said, that, you know, basically she gave me a lot of hints. And then she said, the main thing is make sure that the women hate the Johns. So that was the most important thing is she said, do not have it like in the movies where they fall in love with a John. And, yeah. And really you have to make it so they hate the guy. And anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
I mean, it's true. It's something that I noticed when I was writing the book that, you know, I was reading a lot of testimonies from women in prostitution. And one thing that they all had in common, and it didn't matter if they were written, you know, in France 70 years ago or in Australia last year, or whether the person was on the street or in a fancy brothel or something, you know, or surprisingly enough, whether the person writing was for or against prostitution as sex work, they all said the same thing. To survive in this, you have to shut off your feelings. You don't go there trying to have an orgasm or having the sex of your life. You go there and you try to shut off mentally, otherwise you can't survive. And some of these techniques are, for example, not letting the buyer touch parts of your body, like having, you know, your lips or your arms or your feet or some part that he can't touch where you keep your feelings intact. And there are many intricate strategies like this that, you know, people in prostitution use to be able to maintain their real self outside of prostitution, which, of course, is very difficult.
So I mean, this obviously harms – that splitting off obviously harms the women who are involved themselves, and I am not going to discount that harm to those specific women. I would also like to jump to the larger social scale and ask why/how does prostitution make the possibility of egalitarian relationships between men and women in general, either more difficult or impossible?
Well, first of all, if you think about the people involved in prostitution, if you think of the buyer, who most of the time has a wife at home, So if he then pays for sex, and he pays for the prostitute to tell him that he's great in bed, you know, this guy might not even know how to satisfy women, you know, where the clitoris is or anything like that, but he's told that, you know, he's great anyway. So he comes back to his wife or his girlfriend, whatever, and she might tell him the truth, or she might not be that interested in what he does, and he'd be like, oh, you're so boring, you're so prude, I'll go to this other woman. Do you see? So instead of actually being faced with the truth and learning something, you know, he's choosing to pay to live in a lie. And this lie then spreads. And it also spreads this idea that you can't get laid as a man if you don't pay, which I think is very widespread in societies where the sex industry is legal. In Germany, for example, which is quite close to Sweden, you know, there is a lot of brothels, prostitution everywhere, and men there, I've noticed, often talk like this, you know, well, you know, if you're gonna get laid with like a girl that's not a prostitute, you still have to pay dinner, you have to take her to the movies, you know, a couple of times, blah 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 blah, and this takes so long that in the end you end up spending more, you know. And the idea behind, of course, is that women don't like sleeping with men, you know, they have to be paid for it. Whereas in Sweden, actually, it's funny, now after we had this law in 1999 about the purchase of sexual services, now we have this idea that if you pay for sex, you're a loser. You know, that's what young guys would say. Like, if somebody would say, like, oh, I'm going to prostitutes, like, I'm paying for sex, they would say, like, what? You know, you can't get it, like, by yourself. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, what's your problem? It wouldn't be, like, a manly thing to do.
You know, I interviewed Kathleen Berry a couple weeks ago, and right. I mentioned this to her too, but I want to mention this again because it cracked me up. A couple years ago, I was watching, I don't know if you have these in Sweden, these like true life mysteries that are on TV where they follow some crime from beginning to conclusion, and they had
do they always solve the crime in the end, or?
Oh, of course they do. Because it's all pro-police state propaganda. They always solve the crime. Anyway, it was like reading a mystery, you know? It's like I recognize this is pro-police state propaganda, but it's still kind of interesting to see who did it, you know? Okay. I just watched Inspector Morse last night. Anyway, I was watching this one, and there was this guy who made a boatload of money in the whole Silicon Valley thing. And then he started dating all these Playboy playmates. And, well, he wasn't dating them. That's the point. I was using their wrong word. He started paying them like $10,000 a night. And he's having sex with lots of women who are, the culture would call, sort of a standard beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the point is that the announcer, and he's paying them all. And the announcer at one point says that this guy was living every man's dream. And
right.
I was thinking, well, let's go along with, for just a second, let's go along with the idea that it is every guy's dream to have sex with lots of women. You know, let's just accept that for a moment, which I don't really agree with, but let's go with it. It's like, he's paying. I mean, the truth is, it's just like you said, he's such a loser that he can't even get a date without actually paying somebody $10,000 to spend the night with him.
Right.
And that, I love that what you just said about in Sweden, that that's considered you're a loser if you do it.
Yeah, like, even if you're not ugly, they think, like, automatically if you pay for sex, you must be ugly, because otherwise you wouldn't need to pay for it, if you see what I mean? Like, or you can't seduce, or, like, you're just, like, an autistic person, like, no, I don't mean no offense to autistic people, but you know, like, how people use the term and stuff. You know, or like you're just a person who is just like sitting in front of the computer all the time and, you know, doesn't know how to socialize. Like, that's the kind of idea that people have in Sweden of a person that pays for sex. Do you get what I mean?
So tell me, well, before we get there, I want to go to the Nordic model in a moment, or the Swedish law. But before we get there, I want you to go back to this whole splitting off thing that you were talking about, and talking about the woman having to be separate and be part of her is there physically, but part of her is not there. And you said that you've written that prostitution requires a split self.
Mm.
And then further, that splitting becomes the ideal for women. So what do you mean by that, and what are the consequences?
Well, I first came to this. This is, again, theory and practice. If you look at the sex work rhetoric, I mean, you see it very clearly how they don't want to say, well, she's selling herself. No, they say, she's not selling herself, she's just selling her body. And then even the term body becomes too close somehow, so then they start saying, no, she's just selling sex. But what is that then? You know, is that like some product that you can just hand over and walk away from? Well, obviously not. You have to physically be there. So already in those terms, they are splitting up a person from the sex the person is having as if sex was some kind of product, if you see what I mean. Which I think is like commodification of language.
Which you'd think, once again, that anarchists would freak out because they're supposed to be against the commodification of everything. But when it comes to sex, well, it is a commodity, evidently.
Yeah. I don't think they've thought about the conclusions about, you know, this theory. But anyway, if you read the sex work theory and you read it parallel with, you know, Karl Marx, The Capital, and you see it's exactly what he's talking about, you know, how when something becomes a product, when it becomes a commodity, it appears like it's, you know, dancing on its head. It's split, you know, from its real world where it's coming from. And that's exactly what's happening to sex when it becomes a commodity. All of a sudden, it starts splitting away from the person, that's actually having the sex and acting like it's, you know, a commodity to be exchanged with others. And this is exactly what the person in prostitution has to do while performing the act. You know, she has to shut off, turn off her feelings. And there's so many strategies, like, for example, using a different name, telling a different life story. You know, you don't tell the buyer your real name. Like, you don't want him to scream your name and to make your name dirty, like, while you're doing it. So you tell him a different name. If he asks you, like, what music do you like? You don't say the music that you really like, because if he would say, well, I'll like that too, you know, it becomes like, now it's dirty. Like, he likes it, so I'm not going to like it anymore. So you make up something else. So actually, a person in prostitution is in practice really trying to split off the sex that she's having from the person that she is, which of course is impossible in the end because you have to be there and he's inside your body. And, you know, as I claim, the body is not something else than the self. You know, the self is the body, because as far as I know, no self has ever walked around without a body, or no sex has ever been had without a body either. Now, you can hear I'm not that religious.
That this is reminding me of a couple things. One of them is, do you know Robert J. Lifton?
No.
He wrote a book called, he's probably one of the world's authorities on the psychology of genocide, and wrote extensively about the Nazi Holocaust and specifically the psychology. He also wrote about nuclear proliferation a lot and nuclear workers, and he would talk a lot about split selves. And he would talk about how many of the – he wasn't talking about the victims so much – well, sometimes, but a lot of times about the perpetrators, and how, for example, the many of the people who worked at Nazi death camps would be perfectly fine at home, and they would be fine parents and family members, and they would have a split self where they have to divide themselves between those two places. So that's one thing I was thinking. And the other thing I was thinking – is Judith Herman wrote Trauma and Recovery. It's a great, great book on the psychology of trauma. And she talks extensively about how trauma will split us off. And so I'm just making a pretty obvious point that the three connections, the thing that connects all three of these is trauma, whether it's the perpetration of it or the receipt of it. Mm. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm just rambling. Do you want to take any of that anywhere? It seems to me that this is all very much in line with just a lot of what we understand about what trauma does.
This also has to do with the fact that everybody's trying to maintain their humanity in some way or another. Like, even though you're doing something that harms you or you're doing something that harms others, you still want to maintain your humanity. You know, I think that's the last thing that leaves the human being. As, you know, we all know people who do horrible things. And I think this comparison is a bit not really correct, actually, to be comparing people who do horrible things and people who have horrible things done to them. But for the moment being, you know, I think it relates to everything. You know, you still want to go home and have the idea that you are a normal person, that you are something else, that you are something better, you know.
And how does, you've also said that this split self becomes the ideal, the splitting off becomes the ideal for women. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, it's prostitution, you know, is not only limited to the actual sex industry, you know, it's being promoted in a light version in contemporary culture a lot, you know, that, you know, your body is some kind of object that's not to be used by yourself. It's there to be seen by others and judged by others and, you know, to take selfies and get likes. And you are someone if a lot of people like your body and stuff like that. So, you know, that's a kind of lighter version, I would say, of a split self in the sense. Your body, it's an object, you know, it's not primarily experienced by you, you know, it's first seen by others. But I was thinking about what you were saying about why some anarchists and left people and feminists and so on are so afraid to take a distance from prostitution, although, you know, logically they would see that it's exploitation. I think it has to do with some kind of like inherent nervousness in the contemporary left, where they have been convinced that people in prostitution want it to be called sex work, you know, because they have heard about these organizations, you know, sex workers' rights and stuff like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what's wrong with people like not being able to have their own opinion? You know, I've come across a lot of sex work groups as well, you know, and of course they can say what they think. Like, we have free speech. Like, you say what you think, but I have the right to say what I think, too. You know?
Well, this actually reminds me of something else that you've said, which is that you can say, yeah, let's bring down capitalism. And for that, you don't receive a lot of hate mail. But when you speak out against prostitution, that the hate mail starts rolling in.
Yeah, people assume all sorts of things. You know, that's also why my last book wasn't at all related to women's things, because I was just sick of that. You know, my last book is on the euro crisis and the financial crisis and its causes and effects, you know, and that was such a relief to me. Like, finally, I can write about economy, you know, even though I might come out in this book as a super communist, whatever, like, people don't hate you for that because they still know, like, that's an opinion that exists. Okay, you know, there are, like, respected people in history that have that opinion. But if I come out and I say, you know, I talk about, like, exploitation of women, surrogacy also, which is very provocative, like, people start assuming you're kind of person, like, they know your personality, you know, and that's very annoying. Like, you never get that when you talk about economy.
Yeah, I've experienced that too, and it's, and you and I can both sit here and kind of smile as we talk about it, but it's actually, I find very disturbing that, you know, I can say we need to bring down the entire economy, and everybody's like, yeah.
Because you know it's not going to happen, that's why.
but then if you speak out, and one of the ways I put that is if you really start speaking out about male privilege, yeah. Then some people get really, really upset.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, of course you want to write whatever you want to write about, but it's also, you know, sometimes the intimidation kind of works. It kind of, you know, all those death threats can be like, oh my God, maybe next time I will weaken it a little bit. I'm not saying that you did that, and I'm not saying I've done it, but I'm saying that the temptation is really there.
Yeah,
it's like,
of course.
Gosh, yeah. I don't want to go through this again.
Yeah. And also, yeah, I mean, there is a constant vilification of people who are against sexual exploitation. I think because it threatens, you know, some deep archetypes within people. And these archetypes, I mean, especially the ones that I deal with in my book, you know, the Madonna and the whore, you know, these are really deep archetypes in the Western culture. And, you know, they have been a bit modernized, you know, so that we think that this is something new and progressive, you know, and subversive and radical, although it's just brushing up the same old categories. And when you threaten these, you kind of shake people from the inside, and this is very unsettling to a lot of people, you know, but I also think there's this other thing that I was talking about, you know, that anarchists sometimes are very much like, oh, but, you know, I know a sex worker and she says that she chose it, so I cannot have another opinion, Like, what do you mean you can't have another opinion? Of course you can have any opinion that you want. You don't have to agree. Even though, like, 100% of all people in prostitution thought this was great, you have the right to think differently. You know? You don't have to adapt your opinions. And as a matter of fact, it's not like that. I mean, the biggest study of people in prostitution shows that 89% want to leave prostitution. So if they're trying to get opinions, you know, hiding behind the skirts of people in prostitution, at least they should know where the skirts are. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, prostitution, generally speaking, you know, if you look at, like, an extensive survey in a lot of countries in the world, don't want to be in prostitution, and especially don't want their children to be in it. I mean, that's why they're doing it, for their kids to be able to have a future, you know, have an education, do something else. And also, I get really sick of some of these, like, queer people who, like, oh, I studied at university. I took a course in gender studies, and now I'm doing sex work. So, like, I can talk about it now. Sorry, man, your background is nothing like the majority of people in prostitution across the world. Like, and if you enter that, you know, for your own thrill or whatever, fine, you know. But don't start writing essays about it, like, the second day you're in prostitution. Like, hang on, you know, because you with your degree is taking, you know, a privilege that a lot of people don't have, you know. And I've met, through the years that I was writing this book, I've met a lot of people in prostitution. And, man, like, their first priority is not writing articles in the newspaper defending sex as work. It's really not, you know. It's other things.
Like food, shelter?
Food, shelter, trying to escape a violent buyer, you know, trying to escape a violent pimp, trying to get rid of all the debts that you accumulate, trying to survive basically day by day, trying to save some money, although a lot of them get into a kind of spiral where you spend all the money you get the same day and you buy lots of things and you drink too much and maybe you take drugs as well. You get into crowds where you shouldn't be, and you're just basically trying to keep your head above water all the time and telling yourself that everything is great becomes like a mantra. You know, yeah, I'm doing this, you know, I'm a survivor. I'm a superwoman. I can do this. Nobody else can do what I'm doing, you know, things like that.
So you've mentioned a couple times the Swedish model. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, the Swedish model, you know, when we first went around the world, talked about it, you know, all the men were like, Swedish model, where is she? And we're like, no, we're talking about a law against prostitution here. They thought we were talking about some kind of supermodel. The Swedish model, actually, which is now the Norwegian, the Icelandic, and soon to be the French, and who knows, maybe other countries will follow. I was in Cuba recently, and they want to adopt this model, too. It is about turning the whole thing around. I mean, for the first time in the world, saying prostitution is not about prostitutes, it's about the buyer. So for the first time, criminalizing the purchase of sex, not the sale. And the idea behind it is that prostitution is not compatible with equality between the sexes, right? So the idea was basically just to change the norms in society, you know. It wasn't a tool, like no law actually is a tool, you know. I mean, you don't forbid people to murder or kill each other because, you know, you're thinking that murder is going to go down, and if it doesn't, you will let them murder each other again. You know, you do it because ethically that's not okay. But then we saw, actually, now that it's been 15 years, we've seen that, you know, it's actually made less men pay for sex. And this is like a side effect that we didn't know. It has changed norms in society. I mean, before, it was 1 in 8 Swedish men who bought sex. And now it's 1 in 13.
So, one of the accusations that I've seen thrown at people who promote the Swedish / Nordic / Icelandic model that has never made any sense to me is that sometimes queers especially will call them whorephobic. And I've never...
And this whole thing is just going too far. Like, we're going to be phobic of everything now?
Well, I've never understood how... Yes, I completely agree with that too. And I've never understood how a law that decriminalizes the women and criminalizes the purchase could be, quote, whorephobic. It would seem to me that if you're decriminalizing the women especially, it seems to me that this is helping the women all the way around. I've never understood it.
First of all, to those people who say that, you know, no woman is a whore. It's not an inherent quality. You're not born a whore, okay? These people are women. And sometimes they're not women, okay? Sometimes they're children. Sometimes they're men. Sometimes they're trans people. Sometimes they're, you know. But no person is a whore. If you call it whorephobic, it's like saying the people in prostitution are whores, you know? I mean, to me, that's whorephobic in a sense. You know, and I think, like, what is this idea that, you know, you can't have a debate anymore? You can't, like, talk about arguments, statistics, facts, analysis. And, like, instead we're going to call each other phobic in all these different ways. Like, to me, that's a totalitarian way of arguing. You know, that's anything but anarchist. To me, the point of a debate is to exchange opinions, you know, in a way that we compare experiences from different parts of the world and we see, you know, what works better, you know. To achieve, you know, a bit of a better world anyway, you know, and I don't know. It seems like the people who are against the Swedish model, like, I don't really know what they want, because sometimes they say, like, oh, it hasn't even worked. Like, there's still prostitution, right? So that means they want it to work. So that means they are against prostitution or not. Or sometimes they say they don't even want it to work because they want more prostitution. You know, but then they should be happy if there's still this prostitution, you know? Like, I don't really get it, you know? I think if what you want is opportunities for people in prostitution, you know, to do other things, the Swedish model is the best way to go. I mean, it's been proven as well in the European Parliament. Because what you have to keep in mind, though, it's not just a law against the purchase of sex. It's also help to people in prostitution. Not only if they want to leave, it's not an exit center or something like that, you know, but the point is that you get help. You can, get help in the way that you can get therapy. You can get a gynecologist. All this is for free. You can, get help finding a job, getting out of debt. You know, all that stuff is necessary if you're going to, really, find a way to get out of prostitution.
So we have like 5 or 6 minutes left, and there's two topics I'd like to cover, and I'm so sorry we're running out of time. Maybe we should just come back and talk about surrogacy another time. But can you do like a 2 or 3 minute version of surrogacy? And, sorry, and then we'll ask another question to wind up.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll try to do it fast. Well, basically, surrogacy is the same thing that we've been talking about the whole hour, but it's reproductive. So it's reproductive prostitution. You don't sell sex, but you sell your uterus. Apart from that, it's basically the same type of industry, commodifying women. It's not commodifying their vaginas, but it's commodifying our reproductive capacities and also babies, of course, because if you can say in prostitution that, you know, you're just selling something abstract like sex, you know, in surrogacy, the product is not so abstract. I mean, it's a newborn baby. So, yeah, this is like the new prostitution industry coming up, you know, where poor women in India are supposed to have kids for the rich people in the West. And we're going to outsource reproduction, just like we outsource production, basically. That's what's happened. And if you look at all these people in Hollywood who are, like, having poor women have their kids because they don't want to ruin their bodies, you know, that's just one side of it. But, yeah, you're right. We don't have a lot of time to talk about it. Because a lot of people get startled, you know, when I talk about surrogacy and say it's like prostitution. You know, they think, oh, prostitution, okay, it's bad. It's like filthy brothels, you know. But surrogacy, it's beautiful babies. Who can be against that? They're so cute.
So what do you want people who – the reason I do these interviews is to try to get people to get off their butts and do something. And
nowadays you can sit on your butt and do something in front of the internet. Isn't that great?
There you go. So what do you want for people who hear this interview? Two things. What do you want them to take away from it? That's like, oh, I heard this interview today. It was really cool. It was about blah, you know, and then give like, you know, what's your point? What are you trying to get at with, what's the core of what you're trying to get at? And then the second thing is, once they understand this core in their hearts, what do you want them to do?
I mean, your listeners, like, where are they from mostly?
Probably mostly the United States, a few around the world. Mm-hmm. And they are people who, for the most part, get that patriarchy is bad, and they get that capitalism is bad, and that this culture is killing the planet, and this culture has a war on women. So they basically will understand most of those things.
Okay.
Well, so it's a fairly advanced audience.
Yes, prostitution sums up all these bad things. Like, prostitution is capitalism, patriarchy, and commodification in a nutshell. Like, if prostitution isn't that, then what is, you know? I don't think that sums it up. I think they should read my book, and then they will find the core argument. But what I want them to do, I think in the U.S. what's very important is to take away the criminalization of women in prostitution that's going on. I mean, you spoke about these TV shows where they, like, try to solve a crime. And I remember when I was in the U.S. and I saw on TV there was this this series that had, like, this Inner Circle song in the beginning, you know, Bad Boys, Bad Boys. What's this thing called? This TV show where they, like, try to trace criminals.
Oh, that's, like, that's every TV show on the airwaves in the United States.
Oh, no, I know. Cops.
Okay.
That's what it was. Cops. Okay. And I remember, like, to my surprise, in this show, they were, like, hunting down prostituted women. You know? And, you know, catching them and not the buyer. Like, they were committing a crime. I think that's the first thing that has to be abolished in the U.S. I mean, nobody should be criminalized for selling sex. And after that, starting to talk about who is really prostitution. And my answer to that, it's the buyer. So trying to focus on the buyer, spotlight on the buyer, you know, and work towards a criminalization of people buying sex. And I know as anarchists, they would think, oh, we shouldn't criminalize anyone, you know. Man, I think sometimes they're hypocrites. Like when I was in Holland and the Dutch anarchists were telling me, like, oh, why do you want the state to do something? And I'm like, man, your state is a pimp. Like you, if you're living off of the state, you're living off of prostitution because your state is taxing prostitution. Now that's okay, you know.
No, I think that's great. And I wish we had more time and we should do this again.
Definitely.
So I would like to thank listeners for listening. I would like to thank you for being on the program. My guest today has been Kaisa Ekis Ekman. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.